Tom Dodson with my colleague, Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. The New World Report, China. I go to a headline in the FT that tells a story of China changing its emphasis in the Americas. China shifts Latin American investment to compete with the West. Beijing pivots, goes the FT subhead. Pivots away from costly infrastructure to focus on technology, renewables, and critical materials. Professor, China's been boasting of how it's building a megaport for Belt and Road in Peru, but now it's moving towards what you'd have to say is resource access throughout the Americas. In other words, give us your lithium. Does this make a profound difference throughout the Americas? I noted there's a photograph of Wang Yi smilingly greeting the foreign minister of Brazil. Does China have a positive image in the Americas? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, this certainly isn't a new trend. It's something that's emerged really in the past 5 years or so. There was a new report by one of the primary organizations in the United States that follows Chinese economic and other activities in the region, the Inter-American Dialogue. And I think that's called a lot of attention, especially making news headlines in Washington and elsewhere. But a couple of general trends that are called out that have been deepening. Number one is China's engagement globally. It is increasingly focused on the high value added technology intensive parts of markets. And so as China's looked out in Africa and Central and Eastern Europe and in other places, it has tried to really push some of its renewable energy sectors. And so it's tried to exploit its production capability in terms of its global investments in photovoltaic, in wind energy, in electric vehicles. And so you see car companies like BYD in terms of their global reach, including Latin America. Part of that also is China understanding the importance of these new energies, trying to lock up the value-added chain, the supply chain in critical minerals, such as lithium. And so those Chinese activities in lithium sector in Argentina, in Chile, in Bolivia, and even although less successfully in Mexico. Also, certainly, technology sectors. We hear a lot about Huawei's advance, but also ZTE and Xiaomi and others in telecommunications, and especially now positioned to take advantage of leadership in 5G as Latin American governments roll that out. But there's also digital things like camera and surveillance systems with Chinese companies like Hikvision, ride-sharing applications, e-commerce with companies like Alibaba, just to name a few things. But certainly, that is the new focus. And when we talk about Belt and Road, China's ability to use infrastructure to pursue its goals, that is probably the hottest dimension of China's Belt and Road right now is not the just the building of highways and railways, but is building electricity infrastructure. And in Brazil that you mentioned, for example, China's put over $36 billion in acquiring transmission assets as well as distribution and others. In Chile, with an expanded share in Transelec, China already owns something like 57% of Chile's electricity distribution capabilities. In Peru, with the conclusion of a new deal, will own something like 100%, literally 100% of all distribution in the greater Lima, Peru area. So these are certainly the areas where China is focusing. There are other dimensions of China's shift. We see that there is a increasing political focus. So some of the things that you see with China's new global engagement postures, it's not just Belt and Road where they had the 10-year anniversary in China a couple of weeks ago, but also you see things like the Global Development Initiative, trying to reemphasize China's kind of very political South-South roots. But you also see things like China's Global Security Initiative, in which Latin America is brought into the picture. China's what they call the Global Civilization Initiative, which talks about essentially principles of rules-based order and democracy and human rights, Chinese style. So the way that China is engaging the world as it pursues markets and as it pursues supply is changing. It's becoming more political. The content is changing. And then there's a question of to what degree is China investing more or less? So there have been important shifts away from big policy bank loans like we saw before and more towards commercial supplied loans. And also there was a bit of a hiccup during the COVID period in which Chinese investment dropped off as it became very difficult because of problems in travel and problems with suspension of economic activity to take those projects forward. So there's now some question of, you know, will China be ramping those engagements back up as we move in past the post-COVID period in a with the economic difficulties that China has? And what I suspect is we're going to see a mix. We're going to see some Chinese re-engagement in the Americas, and we already see it. We had something like eight Latin American leaders just last year going to China to take major projects forward. But at the same time, we are probably going to see some increased restrictiveness in a number of different sectors just because of China's internal growth and internal finance problems.
The FT gives us statistics, $187.5 billion invested by Beijing, it says, in Latin America and the Caribbean in 20 years, 2003 through 2022. 187, what's that, about $9 billion, $10 billion a year? I understand. I'm just guessing here, the numbers. However, there's this. The U.S. has warned our allies in Americas to be careful about Chinese investment because of debt trap, because of intellectual property theft. And then there's this, Professor. I know I'm looking for trouble, but so's the FT. So I go along with it. Beijing's investment in Mexico is increasingly concentrated in high-value manufacturing, with Chinese companies moving production from China to Mexico to take advantage of that country's privileged trade access to the North American market. That's clever. Is it also sinister? I can't tell.
Well, this is part of the irony and the unexpected consequences when you have interdependent economies. And so one of the byproducts of our move towards decoupling, or as the administration currently calls it, de-risking, is that the Chinese companies who are worried about being cut out of value-added chains because they're physically located in China, both distant and because of their Chinese identity, are now looking to relocate some of their operations into proximity to the United States, especially in Mexico, where, again, if you are able to be seen as legally a Mexican company with Mexican capital, even though you are effectively a Chinese company, you can help preserve that access. We've seen this in big ways, for example, with Elon Musk and inviting his Chinese subcomponent suppliers to come to Mexico to join his big Tesla gig factory there. But more broadly, you have large numbers of Chinese companies coming into the North and Maquiladora sector in places like Nuevo León, and that's become one of the biggest stimuluses. By some calculations, over 40% of new investment in that kind of patio warehousing, distribution, light manufacturing space in the north of Mexico, oriented toward the U.S. market, is actually by Chinese companies. And so, you know, that creates certain legal issues of making sure that, if you're trying to get away from dependence on Chinese suppliers, you're not actually just having Chinese suppliers right across the border as opposed to in China itself. But Chinese reinvestment has certainly been one big piece of the Mexico story.
And the presence of Huawei in the Americas, is that an issue? Do people talk about it? Because Huawei was in the news during the Trump administration, and in the beginning stages of the Biden administration, no one, to my knowledge, has written that Huawei is now trustworthy, but it seems to be a dominant player in the Americas, well, along with cloud computing and 5G technology.
It is certainly a big risk, but how Latin Americans feel about it depend on their perspective vis-a-vis the United States. But it's actually not just Huawei, although Huawei gets talked about the most. It is Huawei, it is ZTE, it's Oppo, it's Xiaomi. It's a whole range of different Chinese companies just in the telecommunications space, let alone a range of other companies in other sensitive digital spaces. And the issue isn't just, fighting a war with China or government military espionage. The issue really is the ability of Latin American countries to be able to protect their sovereignty of decision and protect the intellectual property of the companies that are operating there. So, for example, Huawei, in addition to 5G, which opens up a range of vulnerabilities, you have, for example, things like cloud computing. Huawei has something like 9 cloud computing centers that are set up across Latin America, including Mexico. Huawei has a very aggressive offering. They're very competitive in terms of their capabilities, their prices versus others, such as, for example, Amazon Cloud Services, where Huawei can say, hey, we'll give you a great deal. Mexican startup, locate your core intellectual property in the Huawei cloud. What could possibly go wrong? But because China has a long track record of essentially robbing the intellectual property of competitor companies to give it to Chinese companies, that creates certain vulnerabilities, especially when we recall that very publicly in China's 2017 national intelligence law, the Chinese state has created a legal obligation that if it identifies certain data that Chinese companies have, they are obligated to turn those over to the Chinese state. It's not just a request. And so the issue becomes that as you have this increasing ubiquitousness of the Huawei penetration and others, and it's estimated that the Chinese companies, for example, have something like 60% of Latin American tech infrastructure in with respect to digital spaces. Huawei, ZTE, others have been operating in Latin America for over 20 years, since the late 1990s. People like Carlos Slim in Mexico, who were once big competitors with Telefonica, have now become effectively partners in deals with Huawei. But again, it is relatively uneven. You have some people like Costa Rican President Rodrigo Chavez, who recognizes the dangers and has excluded Huawei from their networks. You have others who try to do partial solutions. The Mexican government agreed to exclude Huawei from part of its infrastructure in the north, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you still have Huawei in the south. But there are a lot of governments that either don't want to see or don't see the risk to their companies and their own sovereignty of decision and want to choose to see it as just a U.S. security thing. And so I think we are still battling that as a kind of U.S. government. And again, the problem is that Huawei has usually a very economically attractive solution. And sometimes they're the only game in town. And so are you going to say you're not going to have a capability, or do you just kind of turn a blind eye and hold your nose and plunge in with a Huawei solution, which frankly is what the vast majority of Latin America who need the tech in one form or another are choosing to do.
Professor Avanelis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Central America, there's democracy at work and something not quite democratic. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.